court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
The co-host, Tommy Smurl, and I am just a dude.
Tommy, why did you get me up so early?
It's Christmas morning, dude. It's Christmas morning. We have to get up and go see what the Jolly Fat Man left us.
What the Jolly Fat Man left us?
Yeah. Yeah. Ever since you were a little guy, you've always come to my house and spent the night at my house on Christmas Eve so we could wake up and go explore your toys together.
I'm a little bit old for toys these days.
Oh, well, I figured since you moved back to town that you wouldn't change.
Well, what did you get me? What kind of toys did you get me?
Well, we have to go look under the tree. We haven't looked yet. It's still early in the morning, and we haven't woken up the fam yet.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
It's Christmas Day.
It's Christmas time in Hollis, Queens. Mom's cooking chicken and collard greens.
That's one of my favorite Christmas songs of all time.
That is a good one. I like that, too.
And you know what movie, what Christmas movie that is actually featured in, don't you?
I have heard it in a Christmas movie, but I don't know. It wasn't Trading Places, was it?
It was not. It was my favorite Christmas movie of all time. Die Hard.
Die Hard? That was in there?
It was. Oh. Whenever the limo driver drops Bruce Willis off at Nakatomi Plaza and he goes underneath and Bruce Willis is upstairs, John McClane's upstairs looking for his wife, Holly Gennaro. He's downstairs rocking out to a little Run DMC.
Well, you know where I was familiar with that song from?
Where?
I don't know where it came from, but I'm sure we got it free somewhere a long time ago. And it was on a CD that had a pack of cigarettes on it.
What?
It was like put out by like Winston Cigarettes or something. and it had Christmas music. It was like Winston Christmas music or something like that. It had all these Christmas songs. I used to play the CD all the time. That song was on there, but it had a lot of good ones. Like, what was it? Tennessee Christmas. There's one on there like Tennessee Christmas, but it had a lot of the classic ones on there, but that was on there too. And I was like, how did that get on a Christmas album? I didn't remember it from the movie.
Yeah. It's Winston Cigarettes wants you to have a smoking holiday season.
That's right.
I think it was also on the CD called A Very Special Christmas, if you remember that one.
No, I don't.
You all had that CD.
Did we?
Yeah. There was like a couple different volumes that came out. The second was called A Very Special Christmas 2, I believe.
That's a good title. Very original.
No, but it had all the really good...
Was that like the number 2 or T-O-O or T-W-O?
I'm pretty sure it was the number 2, and it had a gingerbread man. And I think the CD was actually green. The first one was red, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Mary used to pick up a lot of Christmas CDs back when CDs were the thing.
Well, I remember because I had that CD, and you all had it too.
Yeah.
So that was one of the CDs I think everybody has. I don't think it came from Winston Cigarettes.
Somewhere they were giving them away free. And I mean, nobody in our house smokes, but somehow we had a free CD from there.
Well, you know, there's a big debate.
Probably
about...
somebody gave it as a gift.
Yeah.
You know, somebody got it that does smoke and they're like, ah, let's give them this one. That's like re-gifting. You give somebody your free crap.
You can have the CD, but just give me the smokes.
Yeah, it's like when somebody works at a place and they come and give you gifts, and it's just the freebies that they give out at their place.
Yeah.
Those aren't really gifts. Don't give me your free crap and say, there, now you owe me a gift. You know, that's not right. I could go around and give people a empty box from work or something like that. Here's an empty box. Put your hopes and dreams in there.
I had a roommate that moved out and left it was probably like a 6-inch black and white TV that you could take camping with you. I think it may have been plugged into like a cigarette lighter in your car or something like that.
That's where the CD came from.
That's right. And so I went to this birthday party one time and I was kind of friends of friends and not really super good friends with the person whose birthday it was, but they invited me over, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to give them this TV. And so I wrapped up, it was new in the box. So I wrapped it up and showed up for somebody's birthday with a 6-inch black and white TV.
Did they think it was cool?
No, they were like, oh, thanks. And I was like, I think I was like 23 or 24, and I just thought it was the funniest thing in the world. I have a weird sense of humor.
Yeah, I guess so.
But though there is a big debate about whether or not Die Hard is actually a Christmas movie.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
No, I fall on the side that it is, because I think if you take away Christmas from that movie, it is not nearly as good.
Yeah,
because
they wouldn't all be gathered there at that time of the day, would they? Right. They would already gone home.
Well, the one guy who's doing the cocaine in Holly Gennaro's office, he did say they just closed on a big deal, so they were blowing off some steam or something like that. But
they were doing some blow, not blowing off some steam.
That's right.
They were blowing it in.
But I was
in the blow.
I always watch that movie over Christmas. So that's one of my Christmas movies.
That is a good movie. I have to admit, that was probably Bruce Willis's best movie, I think.
It is. I found I don't think I showed this to you. It's a Christmas ornament like thing where you print out and you can actually make a Christmas ornament of Bruce Willis crawling through a duct. And you basically take a like cardboard and you take aluminum foil and you fold it to make it look like a duct. And there's this picture you can print out. It's like a high res picture and you fold it in there. And so it looks like he's crawling through a duck. And I actually made that. I'm not very crafty, but I crafted that. So I was pretty proud of it.
Yeah. My heart dropped there one time because, you know, his saying that he has in there, yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah.
And we won't finish the rest. But Charlie was riding her little rocking horse that we have at the house, and she starts going, yippee-ki-yay. And I went, oh. But that was it. It's because she watches a cartoon called Sheriff Callie's Wild West, and Sheriff Callie says yippee-ki-yay. So she was not imitating Bruce, luckily. that would not be a good yippee-ki-yay to hear.
Well, we thought for this episode, we kind of got inspired a little bit by Sawbones and what they were kind of doing. So I guess, is it a spoiler if we put it out?
No, I don't think so, because they will have already done it by the time we do it. They won't have released the version yet, but they will have done the live show.
That's right. Well, they're going to talk a little bit about some medical injuries, which a certain someone sustained in a Christmas movie.
So we were inspired to look at the plots of some Christmas movies and what some of the legalities would have been involving these plots.
Now, I've already gone on record just now saying that Die Hard's one of my favorites. Well, it might be my favorite Christmas movie, but so you have a couple favorites too there, right?
Yeah, but first I think we should talk about Die Hard.
Okay.
I mean, my biggest question in this is jurisdiction.
Oh, okay.
I mean, Bruce Willis is out of his element. He's come in from out of town, and he's in a different city, and yeah, he may be a cop, but that doesn't mean you just walk around and shoot everybody up and everything else, and it's okay.
Well, yeah, he is out of his jurisdiction, and this is the classic jurisdiction that you thought we were going to talk about when we were talking about jurisdiction.
This is what I thought jurisdiction was all about.
Not the legal. Well, it is legal, but not the lawyer talk definition of jurisdiction.
Yeah, not the wimpy lawyer version, the real man, policeman, shoot 'em up version.
But yes, he is out of his jurisdiction because he is a New York cop and he is in L.A. So he actually has no legal authority to act in a police officer capacity there.
It's almost as far out of your jurisdiction as you can get, coast to coast.
Pretty much, yeah. Now, the LAPD, they have the initial jurisdiction because it's happening right there in L.A., but then the FBI agents show up, and they actually have jurisdiction over the entire nation.
Oh, yeah, what they say goes.
Yeah, so they have a broader area that they get to police. So if you think about that, that's a plot device that is used in quite a few movies, not just Christmas movies, but jurisdiction for police officers. If you think about like Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop,
yeah,
he's a cop in Detroit, but he goes to Beverly Hills to try to solve the crime of his buddy who disappeared or got killed or something like that.
And he just walks around and flashes his badge and does stuff, and he's not even a cop there.
No, he's not. He doesn't have any jurisdiction there, but they kind of give him a bit of a, I guess, professional courtesy since he's, you know, he's on the job, I think is what they say.
Well, then he takes it even a step further in 48 hours.
Oh, Eddie Murphy again, yeah.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy. Nick Nolte's the cop, and he pulls him out of prison. He's a convict, and he pulls him out of prison to go try to solve some kind of crime with him. And so he basically dresses him up, and he goes around and acts like he's a cop working with Nick Nolte, and he's actually a con out trying to catch some of the people he used to work with.
They don't give Bruce Willis too much professional courtesy, though, when he's in L.A. I think probably because he's shooting a lot of guns and blowing stuff up a lot.
Yeah, that takes away your courtesy. They're probably pretty much.
Hey, man, can you turn it down a little bit?
I like the line in 48 Hours where Eddie Murphy walks up to a guy in a bar and he says, you know, he flashes like a fake badge and he turns the guy around to pat him down and he pulls a roll of money out of his. He says, "Where'd you get that?" And he goes, "From my job." And he goes, "Don't tell me that. You're too stupid to have a job."
Did he keep it?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he pocketed his money. Yeah.
Well, maybe he was a cop.
Ooh, that was a blow. It's Christmas, Michael. Keep some Christmas charity in your soul there.
No, I have lots of friends that are police officers. They would never do such a thing.
No, that's right. At least not in a movie.
Well, in a movie they probably would, but in real life, I don't know any of my police officer friends that would do that. So we have actually a lot of family members that are police officers, too.
This is true.
Now, if you're talking about jurisdiction for people who are not FBI or things like that, federal government agents, the ones who actually have generally the most authority in a state are your state troopers or highway patrol, because they can patrol the entire state.
They can go anywhere in the state, right?
Yep. And then the one that actually has probably the most in the state, well, not the most in the state, but as equal to a highway patrol, but you don't think about it, are like DNR, Department of National Resources officers, like the ones who handle any kind of wildlife violations, because that's a state agency as well, and they have jurisdiction over the entire state. So, and they actually, if you think about it too, a lot of times when they respond to a call, they might be out in the middle of the woods somewhere, mm-hmm. and they're really isolated. So that's actually one of the more dangerous and higher jurisdiction level jobs out there are people who work for Department of National Resources for your state, or Florida was FWC, the Florida Wildlife Commission. So those officers have a lot of authority and a pretty dangerous job, actually, too.
I've never heard of anybody. Yes, this is 911. What's your emergency? I need the DNR at once.
Well, they do a lot of things.
There's some deer poaching going on. I need help.
I was actually talking to a DNR officer maybe 2 weeks ago in Wayne County in Magistrate Court, and they had somebody who they set up a decoy deer, and they put it by the road at night, and they sit there and wait. And sure enough, these two
people hunt from the road.
These two yokels show up at night with a spotlight and shine at the deer and shoot it. It's a decoy. It's like, why would you do that?
And then they were fighting with him over, "We shot that deer. It's going with us."
That's right.
Now, buddy, I don't care if you do got a badge. We done shot it.
I'll tell you what. There's a certain disdain for people who poach things like that, especially in areas where there's a lot of people who are who like to hunt and fish, because they follow the rules. And and it's important to follow the rules if you want to make sure that basically the nature is conserved for future generations. And a lot of people that are hunters and fishermen or fisher people or whatever, they persons of fishing, they actually take that to heart and get really offended. I know I do. Mm-hmm. When somebody does something that I think is bad and against the law, because every law out there for conservation, for the most part, has a reason. If you're not following it, then you're just basically, you know, saying
a screw, bad dude, screw nature,
screw future generations. I don't care. I'm selfish. So.
That's like stepping off the trail and stepping on the butterfly.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
That's right.
Or a caterpillar.
Yeah. Changes the laws of the rest of the life.
Oh, you're talking about chaos theory?
Yeah.
That a butterfly flaps its wings in Taiwan and something happens in West Virginia?
Well, it was also a book that I read.
Oh. What book was that?
And they went back in time and I can't remember the name of it, but the plot was they went back in time to see what it was like back in the days of the dinosaurs and stuff like that. And they had paths built so you didn't actually walk on the earth or kill any plants, because they said you can't change anything. So anything you change might cause a ripple effect later in time. And this guy stepped off, something happened and he panicked and he stepped off the path and he had crushed a butterfly. And so when they returned to their present time, it was like everything was in a different language and the society was completely different.
Wait a second.
It wasn't a Christmas movie.
No.
Or a Christmas book. Completely off topic. I digress. I'm dying something. Dying hard.
So what's some of your other favorite movies for Christmas time?
Well, the number one favorite of all time, Christmas Vacation.
Oh, yeah. There's no argument there. That actually probably eclipses Die Hard in my book as best Christmas movie.
We watch that at least two or three times every Christmas season. We all know it by heart, but we still laugh through it the whole time we watch it. It's always whenever we're putting up the tree and decorating the tree, mm-hmm. we always have that on while we're doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just a great movie.
Do you remember when we saw that the first time?
The first time?
Yeah.
Well, the first time was... the first time I saw it, you weren't born yet.
Christmas Vacation?
Yeah.
No, I was born.
I think it came out in 78.
No, Christmas Vacation came out in the 80s.
I think it was 78.
Oh, well, I'm gonna go straight to the computer on this one because this is a very important.
Pause us while we find this information. Do, 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 do,
okay, I have an answer.
Yes,
it's not in the 70s.
Oh,
it's barely in the 80s.
Oh,
it was 89.
89?
Yeah,
really.
The original. I
thought it came out way back.
Well, the original National Lampoon's Vacation came out, I think, in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Then you had European Vacation, which was mid 80s, and then Christmas Vacation, which was late 80s.
Well, I didn't remember the time frame. I was thinking it came out around shortly after I graduated, so that's what I was thinking.
Well, it must have been a quick decade.
Yeah, I was mostly unconscious.
so obviously, if you
think, I was in college.
if you thought I wasn't born yet, then you obviously don't remember going to it.
No, I don't. I've seen it so many times since, I don't remember the first time.
No, we went and saw it in the movie theaters. I think it was me, and I think it was Charles, and a bunch of us went.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I remember, like, pretty much just about peeing my pants whenever he went down the sled on that hill.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I remember being in the theater with it, and I thought I was going to die. I was laughing so hard.
Well, the main things from a legal standpoint that come up to me in that movie is when he's putting up the lights and he slips off the roof and grabs hold of the gutter, mm-hmm. and then the gutter comes loose from the house and the big ice spear comes out of the gutter and shoots through the neighbor's window, destroying their stereo system. And, of course, the window's shattered, the stereo system's destroyed, and they're not there. The neighbors, they come home, and here's the window busted, and there's a stereo system messed up, and just a damp carpet.
Yeah.
Like, what happened? How did this happen? What happened to us? And he never went over and told them.
No.
You know, I mean, there's obviously at least an insurance claim, a homeowner's claim there or something. They could have sued him or something, but, I mean, he had some kind of liability in that.
Now, can you think of any legal theory we've talked about previously on the show that may be applicable to a situation like that?
Mm. Well, they definitely were in the neighbor's – he was in the neighbor's curtilage.
No, it's not.
He shot his ice stick in there.
No, that's not it.
No, I don't know what one you're leaning towards.
Res ipsa loquitur. Remember what that means? The thing speaks for itself.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's a Latin phrase. And remember, that was the case that you learned in law school about the barrel that came
out of the place and landed on the guy.
On somebody, so.
Yeah.
The one theory I think about that might be a little bit applicable to that would be that res ipsa theory. Because basically, your stereo doesn't blow up and have a puddle next to it and a window shattered unless there's negligence somewhere.
That's right.
So, but I think even then you're going to have a burden of proof problem unless somebody saw it happen or you have a video camera. I bet they would have video cameras on their house in this day and age.
In this day and age, not then.
If I lived next door to Chevy Chase, I would have a video camera pointed at his house all the time because he's constantly breaking stuff.
So you could send in videos to America's Funniest Home Videos, probably.
That's true too. No, but
they see him up on the ladder and they say, "Do you think he's gonna fall and break his neck?" Well, he'll probably fall, but he won't break his neck. It's like we're not that lucky.
Yeah. He's just one of those kind of neighbors.
But he just had it in for their windows because later in the movie when he freaks out over him getting his Christmas tree burned up, mm-hmm. he goes out in the yard to chop down the tree that's in between the houses there. And as it falls over, it crashes through their dining room, the neighbor's dining room window while they're eating. And,
yeah.
and he drags it back out, not so much as an excuse me or sorry about that or anything else. Just Too bad you were in my way.
Yeah, no, that would definitely be an easier case to prove, I think. I mean,
yeah, but you look out the window and you see him.
And catch him with the smoking chainsaw right there. And he probably could file a claim against his actual homeowner's policy or something like that.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, cutting a tree down, essentially.
And he's just not a very nice neighbor either. When they come out earlier, when he brings home that first tree that's way too big for the house.
Yes.
And he's got the chainsaw out there with the Jason mask on and everything. And they say, where do you think you're going to put that? And he goes, bend over and I'll show you.
Yeah. That's,
he goes, don't talk to me like that. And he goes, I wasn't talking to you. So he looks over at his wife. What? He's kind of rude, isn't he?
I have to confess that there's probably 2 or 3 times a year somebody asks me where I'm going to put something. And my stock response is always, bend over and I'll show you. And they just look at me like, what?
And if they ask you what, just say, I'm not talking to you.
Yeah. I use that line all the time. Now, the other thing he does to those poor neighbors too, and this might be when they're cleaning up the stereo and all that. And that was back when people actually had stereos. People mm-hmm. don't really have stereos like that anymore.
No, because everything's digital.
But that's when he plugs in his lights, I think.
Yeah. So they finally come on.
Yeah, and then all the power goes off next door, and then it comes back on and it blinds them. So it's almost like a flashing strobe light effect. So I think there could be some negligence there too.
Yeah, they had to click in the atomic generators to bring the power back up. Yeah. But you're right. Yeah, with that light blinding them in like that, it has to be like a nuisance of some type of, it's not an attractive nuisance. It's an unattractive nuisance. That's what it is.
Yeah, well, attractive nuisance basically is something that's on your property that would bring other people into it, like a big sand pit the kids play on, or gravel pit.
But I think what we're establishing is Clark Griswold is the worst neighbor to have.
Oh, he's a walking negligence cause of action.
And talking about his lights that he had up there too, do you see the way that they're all plugged in? There's got to be all kinds of fire code violations going on there.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way that's legit.
Call the fire marshal over to his house.
Yeah. He's frying cats under the living room chair and everything else.
And then, of course, you can't forget Cousin Eddie.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he committed a crime against the whole neighborhood there.
That's right. He, like, spewed his raw sewage into the storm drain.
Crapper's full.
Yeah. And then let us not forget the ending of the movie where he kidnaps his boss.
Yeah, that's true.
Commits an actual crime.
We have an actual kidnapping involved.
Yeah.
And then I don't know that you can really do this. The cops come in to bust him, and the guy says, that's all right. I'm not pressing charges. Can you do that? Can you commit? Can you kidnap somebody? And then the guy you kidnap decides you're okay and he's not going to press charge? I don't think it works that way.
Well, a lot of times if the victim who is basically going to be your best evidence of the case changes their story, especially a charge like kidnapping, you might not think about it. But kidnapping, as far as criminal charges go, especially in West Virginia, it's right up there with murder. I mean,
that's what I mean. I don't think you can just decide not to press charges.
No, but the thing is that if he says, well, he really just took me out for a ride, my wife misunderstood everything, because he never actually gave a statement as to what took place. So,
well, that's true, but they just spent $1 million sending the SWAT team in through all his front windows.
There's probably going to be a bit more red tape, and there's probably going to be some criminal charges from it, but maybe not quite kidnapping. So I know there's a lot of times I'll have cases, and this happens a lot, actually very sadly, in domestic cases where somebody will file some sort of assault charge against a domestic partner, and then it'll come to the time where it's time to go to trial, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to press charges anymore. And I'll tell you, in situations like that, the prosecutor is usually, and especially the officer too, is pretty reluctant to drop it. They're like, well, you know what? We'll just go forward with it anyway. Maybe a jury will convict him. Maybe they won't.
Well, if you have physical evidence, especially like pictures of the spouse being battered or something like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, and as far as kidnapping, if you've gone as far as you've got the police involved, they've got SWAT teams out. Yeah. I don't think you can just wave it off and say, my bad, my bad.
Well, I had a case not too long ago where a client was charged with kidnapping, and the woman he was with basically said she was basically with him and she was not supposed to be with him, and they were doing some other nefarious things. And she went into a bathroom at Walmart, and he left abruptly because he thought he lost his drugs somewhere else. So he left the Walmart, and she freaked out and got mad and called the police and her mom, and the police came, and her story was, he kidnapped me and brought me here. Hmm. And she told the police all this stuff that he basically had forced her there and all this. So I got the videotape from Walmart, and it showed a little bit of a different story. And so they ended up dropping the charges of the kidnapping for him.
Well, that's a different story there.
It was, but it was, but again, it was one of those things where it was very, that was somebody's story, and it was super, super, I mean, they were very, took that very seriously, because kidnapping is a serious charge, so.
It is a very serious charge. You should not do that. Anybody contemplating a kidnapping out there, I would advise you not to, and I'm not even a lawyer.
Well, kidnapping, I think in the movies, it just seems so, so common. It happens all the time. You think, oh, it's just a little kidnapping.
Yeah, it's just a small one. And you know, I guess also, in this day and age, Chevy Chase would have been, would have a, sexual harassment lawsuit against him too, for the way he talked to the lady, the girl at the counter there at the store.
Well, I don't know if it'd be,
seemed very inappropriate.
It was very inappropriate, but I don't think it'd be sexual harassment, because traditionally sexual harassment is by, in the workplace by
people. She's in the workplace.
He's not though.
He's in her workplace.
Well,
he's making her uncomfortable.
He is, but I don't think it would actually be sexual harassment as defined generally.
Well, he's just a general run-of-the-mill pervert.
Yeah, pretty much. He's just your general lecherous individual.
Russ, what do you think? Can't even see the line, can you? No, Dad.
Mary, that's my name.
Oh, crap.
yeah, there's a lot of legal stuff in Christmas Vacation that you don't even think about.
It's funny, I had to explain to Charlie, because we've got two of the figurines from that. We've got one with Chevy Chase where he's finally making the connection of the wires when they do hallelujah. Oh, yeah.
With his hair.
We've got, yeah, we've got that, and that one lights up and sings. And then we've got another one of Cousin Eddie holding his hose, emptying out the crapper. And so I had, she picks him up and she wants me to explain to him. So I'm explaining to him about Chevy Chase. Then she picks up the other one and wants me to explain. I said, well, that's Cousin Eddie. And he's dumping out the toilet from his RV. What? Why? So I haven't tried to explain this.
Well, when people go camping in an RV, nature calls. She's pretty proud when nature calls, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she takes great pride in her. She wants everybody to come see it.
It's true.
If so you now, get a random text from Justin, don't look.
Yeah. Yeah, that happened to me like last week, I think. We were sitting there, I was like, yeah. So there's another Christmas movie that we were talking about, and you and I hadn't really thought about this one too much, but Sydney and Justin and Griffin and Rachel were all sitting there, and they said, well, that's actually probably the most legal of all Christmas movies.
Exactly. It is, the whole thing is based on the legal document and someone being forced to do something because of a clause.
And that movie is The Santa Claus. And oddly enough, I have never seen The Santa Claus.
Not one, two, three, or four?
There's four?
Well, I don't know. Probably not four, but there's at least three.
I've not seen any of them.
I can't believe you haven't seen them.
So what you're going to have to do, because we just picked up on this this movie here, is you're gonna have to tell me a little bit about the plot and what happens. I mean, I kind of have the gist of it, but
all right. Well, Tim Allen plays the main character in there, and he comes out and he surprises Santa while Santa's up on his roof, causing Santa to slip and fall to his demise. So
does he do it on purpose? Is he like, is he trying to scare him, or he's like,
he just heard the noise and came out and hollered up at him, and
he's like, hey, fat man,
yeah, something like that.
Okay.
And so Santa falls and dies. So the Santa Claus is, if you're the one that kills Santa Claus, you got to take over for him.
Oh, so that Santa Claus that was up on the roof probably killed Santa Claus before.
Exactly. That's how he stays so youthful, apparently, is he, when he dies, there's another one that takes his place.
It's like the Princess Bride and the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yeah. So he did not want to be Santa Claus, though. He had no interest in being Santa Claus, but he started physically changing to him and growing a beard. And despite shaving every day, he would still come back and have a full beard the next day. So it's kind of like you. And he would.
I do have a beard, and I have put on a little bit of weight this season.
Did you kill Santa? You want to confess to a crime?
I'm not going
to
answer that.
Did you commit a Santa crime?
Santa crime?
Yeah, I think you're a Santa criminal. And so he killed him. So he had to become the Santa, and he didn't want to. But then as it progresses, see, he's has to tell his son so that his son will not be scared of him, that he is Santa Claus. And so his son then is trying to convince his mom and dad, well, his mom and her new boyfriend. I don't think they're married. I can't remember. It's been too long. But anyway, he's played by Judge Reinhold, mm-hmm. who was
not a real judge.
No, he's not a real judge. He was in Fast Time at Ridgemont High, played the big brother.
Oh, I know who Judge Reinhold is.
He always reminds me of Marshall from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
They're like the same guy, but a generation apart or something like that.
Judge Reinhold actually did play a judge on Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't watch that, remember?
Oh, yeah. It's a good show.
Yeah. You tell me that.
Every time.
But anyway, he was a psychiatrist, so they kept trying to treat the kid for being crazy.
Uh-huh.
But Tim Allen would come around Santa Claus and take him with him, and this was in violation of their child custody agreements because she had custody of the son. He just had some visitation rights.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, this was obviously violating their custody agreement.
So we've got a lot of issues going on here.
Yeah. We've got an enforceable contract, or at least it's as far as Santa Claus is concerned, it's enforceable. He's working against it. And then we also have, you know, child custody laws being violated.
Well, now, in order to have a valid contract, and if, you know, I guess that's what we're examining the first issue, you have to have certain things in order to make it enforceable. There's got to be generally offer and acceptance. You have to have some sort of consideration. And those are, I guess, basically the two things. You know, offer and acceptance and consideration. And so in this case, I guess my question would be, was there an offer to Tim Allen, or was it just kind of like, hey, you're going to do it?
Well, he had to sign something. I know that.
Oh, so he did sign something.
Yeah.
Well, if he signed something, that would probably be deemed as acceptance. So probably being presented with a document saying, hey, you knocked off Santa, then you got to become Santa. And then he signed something. That would probably be offer and acceptance.
I don't think that he fully understood that at the time he was signing it.
Really?
Yeah.
So there may be some sort of defense saying that.
Didn't have a meeting of the minds?
Yeah. There you go.
There you go. Pick that one up, counselor.
Yeah. But, you know, he's an adult. He knows what he can read the contract.
Well, we probably should have reviewed this for further details because I don't really have all the details exactly how it came along. But I know that he got, I won't say tricked into it, but I guess in the panic of the moment,
mm-hmm.
you know,
he was under duress.
Yeah, probably under duress, but I don't think they recognized it as duress. You know, it's just, that's the way it is, dude. You killed him. You take over. All right. Let me go back and backtrack for a minute. There was never anything actually signed. I got that part of it wrong. I had to refresh my memory. I just ran out and watched the movie. I just put it on fast forward and ran it through.
So now it's like, it's late Christmas morning.
Yes. So I had everybody just wait. Nobody could open any presents until I got this straight.
All right. What that's called a trial is if you have a witness and they can't remember something.
Is it a recess?
No. You ask the judge.
A brain fart?
May I refresh the recollection?
Refresh the recollection.
Yeah. And you go forward with some sort of document. So basically if you say, oh, I can't remember that. It's like, well, if I gave you a document, would that help refresh your recollection? And they say, yeah. Say, judge, may I approach the witness and attempt to refresh his recollection? You may approach. And you hand him a piece of paper, and they read it silently. Then you can take it back from them, or sometimes the judge will let them keep it, and say, all right, is your recollection refreshed? And they're like, it is. Thank you.
That's the legal term, huh?
Yeah.
Can I refresh his recollection with puffery?
So your recollection is refreshed now.
All right. Well, anyway, all right. So he was reading 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. The Tim Allen, this character, was reading mm-hmm. Night Before Christmas to his son, Charlie, happens to be coincidentally, he's got a Charlie too. But anyway, so they hear the noise. He goes out. They surprise Santa. He falls and dies. And so they're looking at, see, he's looking through his pockets for ID, and he finds a business card that says, Santa Claus, the North Pole. And on the reverse side, it said, if something should happen to me, put on my suit. The reindeer will know what to do. Well, of course, Charlie insists that he put on the suit. So he did. All right. So at the end of their ride, the reindeer takes Scott and Charlie back to the North Pole, where Scott is informed by the head elf, Bernard, that he is the new Santa Claus. Well, of course, Scott doesn't want to be Santa Claus. He wants to go back to his life as a high-powered executive. But Bernard tells him that, hey, you accepted the contract when you put on the suit. And he shows him the fine print on the card and discovers that it says, in putting on the suit and entering the sleigh, the wearer waives any and all rights to any previous identity, real or implied, and fully accepts the duties and responsibilities of Santa Claus in perpetuity until such time that the wearer becomes unable to do so by either accident or design. So that's his Santa Claus that he's trapped into. In putting on the suit, he fell into that trap. He didn't read the fine print.
That's right. So really,
you've told us to do that in past episodes.
You have to. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, it's probably a little fishy if it's super fine print and the contract is only fine print like that. So, you know, slightly dubious, but
Santa Claus would be dubious.
Yeah. Well, whoever the authorities who he contracted with. So that's another question. Who do you actually contract with to do this?
Probably a little elf lawyer.
A little elf lawyer.
Yeah, that's what I'd figure. Or maybe Commerce Clause took care of it.
Commerce Clause, he's the one who handles all that.
Yeah, that's a business dealing. He handles the finances and all the business dealing. He writes the contracts.
So the offer was basically like, hey, put on the suit, finish delivering these packages, and if you do that,
you're the dude. No, it wasn't even deliver the packages. Put on the suit and get in the sleigh, and that was it.
Right.
That's all she wrote.
So that was the offer. You become Santa Claus by doing that. And he accepted it by his actions of putting on the suit and getting in there. And then the other thing that I talked about previously was consideration. And so, you know, there has to be some sort of something exchanged for his services.
He considered putting on the suit.
Well, but also he gets he probably gets the North Pole and he gets the sled and the reindeer. And
he gets Mrs. Claus.
That's the sequel though, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's still got to find her. That's the other part. He's got to find a Mrs. Claus. I guess she automatically dies too or something. You got to start over.
Yeah. What happened to the other Mrs. Claus?
I think she must have, when he died falling off the roof, suddenly somewhere back at the North Pole, she fell over and took out a couple elves.
That's the dark side of the Santa Claus they don't talk about. But yeah, I think you basically do have all your necessary elements there. You got your offer, your acceptance, and your consideration. So, you know, it could be a binding contract. Now, I think a good attorney might be able to get you out of that.
Especially if you couldn't read the fine print. If it was so small, you couldn't even read it.
Yeah. Now, if it was like a full-on document that he had time to read and go over and consult with his counsel about and said, made an informed decision about it, I think it would definitely be, he'd be stuck with it. But, you know, this situation,
But now let me be devil's advocate here. If I have a dead guy laying in my front yard, and even if he has a card that says, put on my suit, I don't want to get dead guy germs on me. I'm not putting that, taking a suit off of a dead guy and putting it on me.
Did he strip him naked and take a suit?
Well, he wasn't naked. He had on his Santa Claus undergarments.
His long, probably long underwear, right?
Yeah, probably so.
With one of those two buttons on the back hatch.
Yeah.
The classic long underwear.
Yeah, probably. I don't really remember. He might have had striped underwear, I think. I don't know. Red and white striped. Look, he looked like a candy cane butt. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably not my first thought.
I don't think I'd do that. And then it says the reindeer will know what to do. Well, those reindeer can know what to do without me in the sled.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think that if you put on the suit, you're pretty much assuming you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're playing Santa Claus, and you're getting in there. You're expecting something to happen. So I don't think you could innocently get in there. So there.
And he had a chance to talk it over with his son, and his son kind of persuaded him to do it.
Son said, do it. Get in there.
He was trying to impress his son.
Yeah. Well, he wanted his son to still believe in Santa Claus.
Right. So, yeah, there's some pros and some cons for it. I'm not ready to dismiss the Santa Claus contract just because it's a little fishy.
You got two more movies that it has to hold up, so. You better make sure it's enforceable.
Now, the other portion was talking about was, I guess, the custodial parent and all that about what he's allowed to do with his son, right? Because he's divorced.
Yeah.
So, usually whenever you have divorce, I don't think we've talked about divorce on the show.
You're not allowed to pick up your son and take him out of state without permission, are you?
Well,
flying all over the damn country with him.
It has to be agreed to.
The world!
So, whenever you get divorced, you have some sort of divorce agreement which lays out everything about your divorce. And that's really the way it's supposed to be, because that'd be a good divorce agreement, because there's no surprises. Kind of like a good contract, a good divorce agreement's the same way. It lays out every single eventuality.
Well, I bet it did not say that he could get in a sleigh and dash around the world without a seatbelt any time of the day or night.
Probably not. But a good divorce decree as far as like child custody is going to lay out who has the child during certain holidays.
This is true.
So a lot of times they alternate. They'll say, you know, you have the children during the even years for Christmas and I'll have them during the odd years. And then you could say during the even years that I'll have them for New Year's and you have them for New Year's during the odd year. So you kind of alternate these things.
Mary would say all the years with me are odd.
So you would alternate these years back and forth in the holidays and things like that. So, you know, now if he takes a new job, that may be a significant change in circumstances to petition the court. So he can petition the court and say, hey, listen, I'm Santa Claus now, so it requires me on Christmas to travel quite a bit.
I think they kind of petitioned the court and said, hey, this guy thinks he's Santa Claus. He's nuts. We got to keep our son away from him.
Oh, did they actually do
that? They wouldn't let him see him. Yeah.
Oh, so there's a mental hygiene type component in this movie, too.
Exactly.
I think I need to watch this movie.
You do need to watch the movie. The first one's worth watching.
Maybe what we'll do is we'll have a Santa Claus Part 2 podcast episode. We talk just about the Santa Claus.
There you go. Once you're up to speed on it, you mean?
Yeah, because I've never seen it.
I can't believe you haven't seen it. That one's been out for a long time. That was back when Tim Allen was still a star.
Well, it came out in the 70s, didn't it?
No, it wasn't that long ago. That was Christmas Vacation. That's what I remember.
Well, there's a lot of good Christmas movies out there. Talked about a few of our favorites. And really, if you think about it, legal issues or kind of plots go through a lot of different movies, even if they're not really geared about that. Like, I didn't really think about all the issues in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation until we started thinking about it. There's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, or we're asked to turn our heads about a lot of legal things.
That's true.
That, no, it wouldn't quite work that way.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So, yeah, that's going to do it for our movie wrap-up for Christmas movies.
That's a ho-ho-ho of it.
And that'll bring us to...
Legal Breeze, 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 ho, 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 ho,
ho. Ho, 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 ho. Legal Breeze is the part of the show where we give different legal terms we talked about. And this one's been a little bit of a rehash because we talked about some of these legal terms before, but I'm going to bring them out anyway.
Rehash. That's what happens when you have to get it out of the ashtray and light it up again.
The first term is res ipsa loquitur.
That means the thing speaks for itself.
That's right.
What else could have happened? You see the damage? You see that laying there? You did it.
We don't know exactly how it happened, but something
happened. Doesn't matter. You did it. Chevy Chase is next door. You got damage. He did it.
That's probably, you might be able to get to stipulate to that in court, Chevy Chase. That's always been his shtick, even on Saturday Night Live with his falling down and
yeah.
You know, physical comedy.
Yeah, that's true.
The next term is... Or the next question is, rather, this is going to be a question, not a term.
Oh, no.
What three things are needed to make up a binding, valid contract?
Consideration, an offer, and acceptance.
That's right.
What do you know?
Those are the three things.
We all are seeking acceptance in this world.
Now, I've said this before. What do I always say can be used as consideration? Do you remember?
It is a, don't tell me. It's a peppercorn.
That's right. Even a
peppercorn. I finally remember it.
That's right. It's only about the sixth time.
Started to say saltpeter, but that wasn't it. That's a completely different show.
What's a saltpeter?
That's from 1776.
What is a saltpeter for?
Saltpeter was to make munitions back in the Revolutionary War.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a funny term.
That was John Adams was writing back home to Abigail to send saltpeter.
Well, the peppercorn can be used as consideration because it's at least something is exchanged. And that's why a lot of times when you have contracts and it says something like in exchange for $10 and other good consideration, which is mutually exchanged or something like that. This legal stuff just flows out of my mouth now.
Boy, I guess so. You know what I'm going to try? I've got an old vehicle that we're going to get rid of at work. And one of my employees said that he'd like to have it. I think I'm going to sell it to him for a peppercorn just to see what the state of West Virginia does with that. I'm going to put down there on the title, what did I sell it for? I'm going to put one peppercorn.
Yeah.
And see how they decide to tax that.
I don't know what the county tax assessor is going to say about that.
I know. It'd be interesting to find out.
Well, I know who the county attorney is, so I'll talk to him for you.
And from then on, if you drive around and say, there goes Willie in his peppercorn van.
The peppercorn van. No, I think actually it has to be, and this is something that's been codified. I think it has to be a certain amount.
Otherwise, codified and certified.
Otherwise, it has to be, otherwise it's considered a gift.
So, well, you can't gift it to somebody that's just...
Because then you pay Blue Book value on it.
Yeah, if you gift it, you can gift it like to a relative, a direct relative, but you can't gift it to just anybody.
Well, even then you can't gift it really to a relative. You should put it for just consideration.
What do you mean just for consideration? Like, a father can gift to a son.
Yeah, they can.
And stuff like that, and you don't have to pay any taxes.
Well, then you're going to argue with somebody. Just sell it for $100 and makes it easier.
Well... Never as easy when you're dealing with the state. That's what I'd say. That's the lesson I've learned.
This is true.
That's why the peppercorn's going to be my way back at them. I'm going to say my lawyer advised me to sell it for a peppercorn.
A little bit of legal knowledge is a bad thing.
That's all I got is a little bit. I got more than that guy in the judicial hearing.
Now, when you see your conservation officer, now you know that his authority is pretty broad now, right?
That's right. And if he dies, don't bring him back to life.
What?
He's DNR. We learned about that in this tattoo.
We did, yeah. Do not resuscitate.
That's right. So if he dies, just let him lie there.
Unless you decide to put on his outfit.
Then you become the DNR representative. That's how they get them.
That's the only way.
When they die, you put on the uniform and you're it for life. Until somebody kills you. That's why they're all walking around out there going, please, somebody shoot me, please.
The deer know what to do.
You know, when you talk about people being concerned with doing the right thing that do hunt and stuff like that, mm-hmm. I read an article a couple weeks ago where a guy had his daughter out with him, like 12 or 13 years old, something like that, taking her out for her first hunting. And they were hunting for deer, and she thought she saw one and shot. Ends up, she killed an elk.
Oh, wow.
And the first thing they did was call the DNR to come out there and report themselves that this happened. It was a mistake. We thought it was a deer. And so as far as I know, they didn't arrest the 12-year-old girl.
As someone who's been hunting before and hunted elk and deer, I don't know how you mistake an elk for a deer.
Well, if you've never been and you're young and you're hoping to find one, you know, that's better than shooting a guy in a brown hat.
Well, that's true, but elk are considerably larger.
Well, maybe she just saw a part of it through the bushes. She didn't see the whole thing.
That's not good either.
I know, you're supposed to have a clear view.
Yeah, so.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I'm not ready to prosecute her just yet, but I got my eye on her.
All right, well, that'll teach her.
Well, that's going to do it for Legal Breeze for today. That was 100%, I think.
Well, you know, it's Christmas Day, so it's like a Christmas miracle.
It's a Christmas miracle.
I'm all tuckered out from this, little buddy. I think that we ought to just climb on back in bed and sleep till the rest of them get up, and then go open our presents and see what Santa brung us.
All right, let's get back up.
All right, good night, little buddy. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Tommy. Merry Christmas, everybody.
And God bless us, everyone.
I was looking for a bell to ring.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I...